You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Good evening, folks. It's Thursday, May 7, 2015, and this is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News broadcasting from the coast of Northern California. I had the occasion this week to review some laboratory results that I have requested on one of my patients. Just so happens to be one of you out there in the land of Pituitary World News, one of our followers. And though the thyroid hormone levels were normal, I increased the dose of thyroid hormone to, as I like to say, optimize the dose. And I want to talk about that. But first, I thought I would review with you some of the concepts that pertain to the interpretation of laboratory test results in endocrinology. A comprehensive review of all laboratory tests of pituitary function is certainly beyond the scope of this podcast, and I would direct you to our website, www.pituitaryworldnews.com, where we have posted articles pertaining to the interpretation of the different laboratory tests of pituitary function. For the purposes of this discussion, I want to mainly talk about T4, perhaps a little bit about TSH, but also IGF-1, to use those tests as illustrative of the points that I want to make. So you're all familiar with a normal range. So how does that normal range become defined? Well, it turns out that it's simply taking a large number of people who are thought to be normal or without disease and measuring a particular analyte, for example, free T4, and then taking the mean and 1.96 standard deviations on both sides of the mean, and that determines the high and the low parts of the normal range. Most laboratory tests, such as T4, are normally distributed. So if you're not familiar with what a normal distribution is statistically, it might behoove you to review that on the internet to try to understand in greater detail. It's the bell-shaped curve. You've all probably heard of that. So free T4, the determination of free T4 in the population sort of follows a bell-shaped curve. Most people are clustered in the middle. Some people are higher than others. Other people are lower than others. So the mean, which is the average, and 1.96 standard deviations on both sides of that mean encompasses the normal range. Now, that includes about 95% of the population. And by definition, 2.5% of the normal population will have a low value but be normal, and 2.5% of the population will have a high value and be normal. Part of the problem is that some people with disease have results in the normal range, and we'll get to that a little later. The normal range for TSH is determined in much the same way. Interestingly, however, the TSH is said to have a skewed distribution, where the peak of the so-called bell-shaped curve, if you will, is more towards the lower part of the normal range. So a normal TSH might be 0.5 to 4.5, for example, and that mean is probably around 1.5 to 2 rather than being in the middle of that normal range. But it's the same here. 95% of the population are defined by that normal range. 2.5% have a low value but are normal. 2.5% have a high value but are normal. IGF-1 level, same thing. However, there are slight differences in the IGF-1 normal ranges between men and women. In my experiences, men are a little higher than women. And we also know that the normal range varies with age. So generally speaking, when we're talking about IGF-1 levels, one should compare the normal range to an age-matched reference range. Sometimes a sex-matched, but generally an age-matched normal range. Most endocrine tests are the same. The mean and 1.96 standard deviations, the bell-shaped curve may be a little different. And again, people with disease can have normal values. Now, one thing we know about each of us is that we all have our own, if you will, set points for hormone secretion. So, example, in some assays, a normal T4 level may be 0.8 to 1.8. Some assays, it's 8 to 18 or something like that. It just depends on how the test is done and the units that are used. But let's, for example, talk about the assay where the normal range is 0.8 to 1.8. I've had my T4 measured, and it averages around 1.4. So that's normal for me. I have my own little bell-shaped curve, if you will. If we checked my free T4 level 100 times, it might average 1.4 plus or minus 0.1 or 0.2, and that will be my little bell-shaped curve. My partner at Pituitary World News, Jorge, for example, his free T4 might average 0.9 plus or minus 0.2. So we all have our own little individual normal values. So when a patient has a T4 measured, if they have no disease, we will know that that's about where their T4 level should be. But in a patient who has disease, we, for example, if you have pituitary disease and your T4 is 0.9, which is in the lower part of the normal range, I don't know what your T4 level is supposed to be. Maybe it's supposed to be 1.4. Maybe it's supposed to be 1.7. Maybe it's supposed to be 1.8 or even 2.0. But if you're at 0.9, you might actually have a, quote, normal, unquote, result, but be hypothyroid for you. By the same token, if you have pituitary disease and are treated with thyroid hormone and your level is 0.9, that might not be enough. If you have hypothyroidism due to pituitary disease and are treated with thyroid hormone and have a result of 1.4, that may actually be too much for you if you're supposed to be at 0.9. Symptoms and signs of either hypo or hyperthyroidism, for example, are very important in interpreting test results in patients who have pituitary disease and those who don't, also in making the assessment as to whether or not medication should be administered or a dose should be changed. IGF-1's the same. So a patient who has acromegaly, for example, had a high IGF-1, goes to surgery, has their tumor removed, comes back to the office 12 weeks later, their IGF-1 level, say, normal range would be 50 to 350. Let's say their IGF-1 level is 345. Well, that's normal, and you would think maybe they were rendered disease-free. But if that patient is still having sweating and swelling and other symptoms of active acromegaly and has tumor on their MRI scan, we know that patient has disease even though their IGF-1 level is normal. Maybe normal for them is 220. And that they'd require additional treatment to get their IGF-1 level to lower than normal. The converse is true as well. So a patient with hypopituitarism might have growth hormone deficiency and an IGF-1 level of 70, which would be normal for their age range, but definitely too low. They would fail a stimulation test. We could give them growth hormone and maybe get their IGF-1 level up to 120, but perhaps it needs to be 220. So again, symptoms and signs would guide a decision about whether or not to treat, and then also what sort of dose adjustments would need to be made. One very important concept is that of Bayesian theory and statistics, and basically what it says is that the pretest probability of a disease is related to the accuracy of the test. So for example, if we took a bunch of normal people and measured their free T4 level, someone at 0.9 is probably normal. But if we took a patient with a pituitary tumor who had fatigue, whose pretest probability of having hypothyroidism is much higher, and found their T4 level to be 0.9, that 0.9 is probably more predictive of hypothyroidism than a 0.9 would be in a normal person. Now, this is important because I see a lot of people with pituitary disease who have low normal pituitary hormone levels, and to me, they have mild hypopituitarism, especially if they have symptoms and they have significant effacement of their normal pituitary by a tumor or some other disease process. But we also see a lot of normal people who have no pituitary disease whatsoever and have pituitary hormone levels that might be in the low part of the normal range, and their pretest probability is very low, and they usually don't have disease. And unfortunately, a lot of them do seek medical attention and want to be treated, and they certainly don't require treatment in that setting because they have no anatomic evidence of disease, and thus their pretest probability is low, and statistically they are one of the normal people who are in the lower part of the normal range, and that's simply normal for them. So bottom line, if you have pituitary disease, I don't know what your normal hormone levels are supposed to be, but if they're in the low part of the normal range and you have symptoms that suggest that your dose of treatment might not be optimized, or that maybe you need treatment and you're not on it yet, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt and either start you on medication or increase the dose of your medication. And that's precisely what I did with my patient this week. Her T4 level was in the lower part of the normal range. She was having a little fatigue, and I chose to increase the dose of thyroxine to push her T4 level into the middle of the normal range, or even maybe to the slightly over the middle of the normal range, slightly to the higher part of the normal range. But the important thing is to keep it normal. No one should have a high T4 just because they want to maybe think that's going to give them more energy, because that's not necessarily going to be the right thing to do and can actually lead to some problems. So I refer to that as dose optimization, and my approach is that if a patient's going to go to the trouble to take a pill every day or injections or whatever, I want to optimize their therapy to try to maximize the benefit of treatment and give them the best overall quality of life. When it comes down to it, being an endocrinologist is a little bit like playing Goldilocks. You know, the old story about too hot, too cold, just right, too hard, too soft, just right. Well, hormone levels should not be too high or too low. They should be just right. And it's important to find out what is just right for your particular patient, recognizing that too much is not good and too little is not good. So that's sort of an overview of test results, interpretation, what a normal range means, how to identify disease, what the pretest probability is, and how that can affect clinical decision making based on people who have a higher likelihood of having a disease process, and thus a test result that might be slightly askew really being meaningful, and how to optimize therapy so that the trouble to take a medication dose is married, if you will, with the proper dose for that particular patient. I would encourage you to discuss this approach with your physicians. If you feel like your, quote, normal, unquote, laboratory results might not be normal for you and want to try to optimize your own therapy. So go out there, be an advocate for yourself, and learn as much as you can. Thank you for listening. Dr. Lewis Blevins, Pituitary World News. Have a good night.